So thanks for having me here. I'll go here with my computer. Happy to be here. I really like Microsoft. They're one of the only mobile operating system companies that let me write apps for them. So thanks for that. You're very accepting of me. So yeah, you probably know that Apple has kicked me out of their developer program. And they suspended me for at least a year, they said. But that year has actually been up since October. A reporter calls me and out of the blue and like, "Guess what today is?" I was like, "I don't know, what?" He's like, "It's your 1 year anniversary. You should be back in." And I was like, "I'm not." So anyway, it was at least a year and it's still going on. And then a lot of people don't know this, but I'm actually banned from the Google Play Store as well. And for the work I did with John Overhyde, looking at their bouncer, malware protection, which doesn't work. And so by saying it doesn't work, I got kicked out of there. And the ban there is like serious. So it's a lifetime ban. So I'm never, ever in my whole life, I'm going to be like 80 and I'm going to come up with this great app idea and I'm going to be so mad. But I'm not talking about apps today. I'm talking about NFC. So this is a talk I gave at Black Hat. It's an updated version of the talk I gave at Black Hat. And it is work I did more or less for about 9 months up until Black Hat. So let's get this show on the road here. So this is about me. I've done some stuff. What am I going to talk about today? Basically, why did I care about NFC? Some basic stuff about NFC, and then the different kinds of attacks I looked at, sort of at a low level and then at a higher level, and then some demos and stuff. Hopefully, will work. Why did I care about NFC? So I was, trying to think of something new and interesting to look at, and NFC was sort of cool. So I started to see like these articles coming out. Remember, this is about roughly a year ago, maybe like 14 months ago. So this one, of course, caught my eye because I love picking on Apple stuff. It was like, iPhone 5 is going to have NFC. Of course, it didn't. But I was like, wow, that would be really cool if they did that because they would totally botch it probably. So all Nokia phones have NFC. This is actually true now, I think. So the Samsung's big flagship phone, the Galaxy S3 has it. Lots of devices. And of course, your guys' Windows Phone 8, at least, I don't know if they all have it, but some Windows Phone 8 phones have NFC. At least when I was looking at this a year ago, it was like, wow, NFC is like this new thing. It's going to be cool. And then the thing that, from an attacker's perspective, that is really neat is, it's writing browser exploits is fun, but you still, at some point, you have to get the guy to like click on your link. Where, the server-side attacks, which is sort of what I started. When I started doing security a long time ago, we started on server-side attacks, and those are really fun because you throw the exploit and it works, and you don't have to have the user do anything. And so NFC is kind of like that, where it's more of a server side. You don't have to make the user necessarily do anything. And then something I didn't necessarily know at the time when I started this was it's actually really hard to test NFC, and that's more or less what this talk is about, is how you can test the code in NFC stacks to see whether there's problems. All right, I should mention like stuff that other people have done with NFC. So my concern was like, can I break into a phone because it has NFC? That if it didn't have NFC, I couldn't. Right? So does NFC open up a new attack vector to phones? But other people have looked at like applications and protocols that have to do with NFC. That wasn't what I did, but they've done some like cool stuff anyway. So some people have figured out like Google Wallet is a payment system for NFC that you can figure out. You can basically make payments and stuff. You can brute force pins. These guys in Trevitas do a lot on NFC. They figured out most recently a way, I think it was in Boston, where you could basically like the payment cards were NFC and they weren't protected and you could just like rewrite that you had like lots of money on them or something. And then of course MIFARE got cracked a long time ago. MDWR has done some stuff. I'll talk a little bit at the end of something they've done most recently. But like one of the things they did was like NFC gym cards, so you could like have a lifetime membership at a gym. And then Colin Molnar has done like a lot of work on NFC too. Like, my favorite one is he's able to get snacks out of a vending machine because you have to pay with an NFC card, I think. And so he would switch that out to where when you were paying for a snack, it wouldn't come out because it was paying at the snack machine down the street where you were standing waiting for the snacks to come out. Anyway, it's kind of funny. Anyway, so there's lots of like fun, interesting things you can do with NFC, but that's not what this talk is about. All right, so what is NFC? So NFC is basically communications based on RFID and with this ISO standard. It's like the frequency initially in the first communication is like 13.56 megahertz. The thing that's most important about it is that you have to be really close. So it's not like Bluetooth or wireless or you know, Wi-Fi or anything like that. It's you have to be like, you know, the spec I think says up to 10 centimeters, but in real life it's more like 4 centimeters. And the data rates are quite slow. So you don't want to transfer like a big file with it. It's just supposed to be like for quick little transactions. So there's basically two modes that you get with NFC. So one's passive. So in that case, like you have a NFC reader, like a phone. This is a Galaxy Nexus. And then you have some other thing. This is just like it's an NFC tag, but if you can look at it, it's basically just a sticker with like a antenna in it. So this thing doesn't have a battery, it has no power. So it just acts passively. And this, when I put the NFC reader up to it, the little like radio for, you know, field, the electromagnetic field that it generates powers the antenna. So in that case, that's passive. The other one's active, so you have two phones, say, and you put them up to each other, and they both have power, and they communicate in a more peer-to-peer fashion. So those are basically the two ways that communications happens in NFC. So how close do you have to be? So I'm not like a radio engineer or something. It's possible maybe you can do it really far. But I just wanted to do some experiments on how close you have to be to actually make NFC work. I don't know if this is going to work because it's like this crazy split screen. It's going crazy. Oh, well, you just have to watch them both at the same time. But anyway, the one on the left, it's like, you know, there's an NFC tag in my phone, and you can see about how close. It's like about 4 centimeters to it. And the one on the right is I have an NFC hotel card key in my wallet in my pocket. And I'll show that you can, like, read through all that stuff and still get to it. So let me see. Is this? So anyway. So that's about how close. So like a thumb's width or something. And so the way that the protocol is written is there's no encryption or anything like that. They just assume that, you know, no one can get that close to intercept your communication. Like that, all the security mechanisms are based on the fact that you have to be very close. Which is fine. You can always build encryption on top of it. But like the NFC protocol itself has no sort of security in that manner. So when are phones? When is the NFC chip on in a phone? So right now my phone is asleep, so I can put a tag up to it, nothing happens. So the phone has to be awake at the very least for the NFC chip to be on. And then for newer versions of phones, like from Ice Cream Sandwich on in Android, for example, it's also the phone has to be unlocked for it to be on. But one interesting thing that I discovered was that for a phone that doesn't have a pin code or something on it, if it's like your friend and you know the person's phone, so here it's off, so the NFC is not working, but you can wake their phone up by just, you know, sending them a text message or calling them or something. So like if you wanted to try to like stick a tag on their phone and attack them, you can just send them a text message and then NFC is on. So it doesn't matter that you know, so the fact that if they don't have a pin, then you're in pretty good shape is what I'm saying. And if they have a pin, then you have to wait until the phone, they're actually using the phone, basically. Okay, so what are different ways that you could imagine attacking someone through NFC? Well, there's basically two that I could think of, at least. And so the first one I call the subway attack. So this is like you're someplace that's crowded, and you're going to like physically get near someone. So maybe, you know, they're on the phone. And you know, you have your phone and you sort of like get close to them, and then you're close enough, you get within 4 centimeters, and then you're talking NFC, right? Or you know, whatever. So I wanted to see whether this would work. So I volunteered my friend Todd Manning. He was my coworker at the time, and the real funny thing about this story is I didn't tell him I did this, and at Black Hat I was giving the talk. And I was like, hey, Todd Manning, are you in the audience? And he raised his hand. And I was like, you know, sorry. Here comes the video. So let me show you this video. This is, he has a hotel card key that's NFC, and I'm going to try to read it. This is this game. So, and then it's being filmed by my other friend, Josh Drake. So see, here I am subtly putting my phone around his backside, right? And, I, you know, So I'm sitting there, I'm waiting, and you'll see me in a second, I think. Okay, so it didn't work. I was like, I don't know why. So I was like, well, I'll just try it out in the parking lot. So here we go. I'm just walking along. I check it out. I was like, did it read? Damn it, it didn't read. So I was like, well, I'll just try again. And so he never knew that I was doing this, and yeah, he didn't know I was filming it either. So very subtle. But I have to say, I'm an NSA trained agent. I worked at the NSA, so not everyone could pull this off, but I could. Okay, so anyway, the end of the story was it never actually read the hotel car key, and I couldn't figure out why. So I followed him back to his hotel. We were on site at an engagement. I followed him back to his hotel room that night, and he pulls out his hotel card key out of his front pocket. I was like, God, damn it. So anyway, this would have worked if I would have done better, intelligence gathering at the beginning to know what pocket. Although it would have been kind of hard to put it on his front side, but anyway. So that's like a fun attack to talk about, but it's not very realistic. The more realistic attack is basically the equivalent of ATM card skimming. So ATM card skimming, as you probably know, they put like a piece of, something physical in front of the ATM card reader. You slide in your card and it gets read by the bad guy as well as the actual bank machine. So you can imagine like something similar for NFC. So this is on the left is a NFC poster that I saw somewhere. And the idea is you put your phone up to the picture of the phone on the poster, and it like downloads a song or something for you. Well, if you turn the poster around, you'll see that there's just, in this case, five NFC tags, right? So all you'd have to do is just, you could just like rip off one of those tags and replace it with one of your, yours. Or you could, just put yours there as well and hope yours wins the sort of race to see who wins. But all you'd have to do is basically replace some of these NFC stickers with NFC stickers of yours, and then when the people went up to use the phone, then they have NFC on. They're trying to use NFC, but instead of getting a free song, they get a free exploit. And then I saw this at the airport recently. It was like, I have a song for you, and you're supposed to reach up and touch your phone. I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. So that's basically the two attacks. One sort of fun, but not super practical unless you're like, incredibly subtle. The other one is like pretty practical, I think. It turns out at the end when I talk about remediations, it's actually pretty hard to figure out a way to make that attack not work. So where might there be bugs? I've shown how you could consider attacking someone with an NFC phone, so now we got to actually find vulnerabilities, right? So at a low level, there's firmware, there's drivers, there's NFC services, stuff like that. So the low-level code that affects all NFC transactions. And then at a higher level, there's the apps that use the NFC data. So I'll look at both of those, and I'll talk about how I did it. So I should mention, when I started this research project, like I said, like 14 months ago, the only two phones really that were out there that had NFC was like an Android phone. I forgot what it was called back then, Nexus S or something. So there was an Android phone, and then there was a couple Nokia phones that had it. So that's what I looked at. The other phones have come out since then with NFC, but this focuses on what was available then. So anyway, on Android, this is basically how NFC works. You've got in the kernel, there's a driver for the for the chip, and then there's a NFC service that runs that is mostly like in Android. Most things are Java, so it's mostly Java, but there's some native code libraries in there too that I've listed here that deal with NFC specifically. And then higher up, there's applications that talk to the service and use the data. And the default application for reading NFC is called tags. And that is just some Java program. So if you're like me and your first thought is to look at memory corruption bugs, your choices basically are the driver or a couple libraries that the NFC service have. The other phone I looked at was a Nokia N9. Which not many people use. I guess some people in Europe use it. Travis Goodspeed uses it, but that's about it. But anyway, it's an interesting little phone. It runs Linux, basically. It's called Migo, but it's basically like some lockdown version of Linux. So here, it's more or less the same sort of architecture, but you've got a little more opportunity as an attacker. So here you've got a driver again. You've got a service. In this case, it's called NFCD, with a bunch of libraries to deal with NFC. And then you've got an application that deals with things that the service gives it. In this case, it's called ConDLGS, like connection dialogues. And it has a bunch of libraries too. And since Migo runs in Linux, this is all native code. So there's at least, it seems like on the service, a bunch of opportunities for for like memory corruption bugs. So when it's time to start looking for bugs, you have to understand what the protocols involved are. And this is basically all the specifications that talk about this. So starting at the bottom is like physical layer all the way up to the very top, the format of the data that's passed. So lots and lots of reading, fun time reading to do this. So I'll just run through super quick the different layers of the protocol. So at the physical layer, we're talking about radio waves. And at one time, I tried to actually do like the testing with, starting at this layer with GNU radio and stuff is like super hard, a nightmare. But basically, this is what it looks like. It's radio waves, and then you get bits out of it, and then you decode it into the actual bits that you care about. And in this case, this little squiggly line corresponds to hex 26, which, if you read the specification, is like a sends rec request, which is like a wake up, like a hello. There's something in the field now. But that's like pretty much too low a level for me to care about. A little one layer up is the protocol layer, and here's where it splits up. There's lots of different protocols that you can talk. So type 1, type 2, MIFARE, type 3, all this other stuff. And because of things I'll talk about in a minute, I only focused on two or three of these in my testing. So just to give you an idea, I'm not going to run through all the details. If you're really interested in like NFC protocols, you can read the spec, or you can check out my white paper about it. But the basic idea is that this is MIFARE Ultralight, which is what this card is. And just to give you a flavor of what these protocols look like, so you've got some stuff that has to do with like serial numbers and like some security mechanisms, and then you've got something called the capability container, which is basically like metadata about the data to follow, such as like how much data is, what the data amount, the data type, stuff like that. And then the actual data itself, which is in a format that I'll talk about in a minute called NDEF. So you've got, just like most things in life, there's metadata and then there's actual data. And then you've got some commands to like read and write and stuff like that. Another one that I looked at was type 4, which is DESFire. And again, it's more or less the same thing. So it's like this virtual file system, and you've got some metadata that points to the real data. And when I'm fuzzing, which is what I'm going to talk about next, I want to fuzz the data and I want to fuzz the metadata. So that's the point. And then there's a pro. This is LLCP is basically a protocol that happens in active. So like between two actual NFC readers, you would use LLCP, and it's basically like packets that go back and forth. And again, there's metadata and data. And at the highest level, the format of the data that I keep talking about is this NDEF. Well, it can actually be any format you want, but NDEF is the typical format that's used. So it's a binary format. It describes like URLs, stuff like that. And there's specifications for lots of different types of NDEF data. But the thing that is like interesting to me is, there's like linked fields and that sort of thing. So it's like it's binary. It seems like there's possibility to find some bugs in it. And then if you were to run like the equivalent of Wireshark on an NFC transaction, it looks basically like this. So there's some communication at the beginning, like, hey, hello, I'm here. And then there's some anti-collision, like, hey, is this you? Yeah, it's me. And then it's like, what's your serial number? Oh, here it is. It's like, what kind of data are you? I'm Ultralight. And then past the little dotted line, then it's like, okay, send me your capability container. Send me, because now it knows it's talking to MIFARE Ultralight, so it can talk that protocol. And it says, okay, now send me your data. And there's the data. So there's not much. I mean, sort of the takeaway of this is when later on I fuzz the metadata and the data, I don't fuzz like the low level, like, physical layers or the like anti-collision stuff. And you can see why is because it's just like such a little bit of data. I'm confident that they can write code to parse that. But the actual capability container and the actual data is more interesting. And then if you want to see how this NDEF data is laid out, this is an NDEF, a little blob of NDEF data, and I break it out for you, and it says things like, type, the length, and so it's type length value. So type length and then the value, and then there's like another, some other links, or I mean some types, and then like some ASCII stuff, and then a terminator. So that's, your typical kind of data. And so going into this, like I was slightly pessimistic because it's like if you look at, like for example, MIFARE Ultralight, there's a maximum amount of data is like 150 bytes or something like that. So it's like, okay, so it's me versus Google in this case, and Google has to be able to write code that can parse 150 bytes of data. It's like they might be able to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I might not win this battle, even though, like, I thought I wouldn't win. So people told me I wouldn't win the battle with fuzzing SMS because, you know, there's 140 bytes, right? But I did. So I was like, well, maybe I'll win, but maybe not. So anyway, I was slightly pessimistic. I was actually pretty optimistic about Nokia because I was like, oh, those guys don't know what they're doing. But we'll see. Okay, so I want to fuzz these low level, you know, the service, the apps, all this stuff. And so to do that, I need to, you know, fuzz. And so fuzzing is basically three steps, right? I got to make test cases, so that's like fuzz the end-up data or something like that. Then I got to deliver the test cases, which, you know, usually means you like fire up a web browser or something. But in this case, it means I have to, like, you know, the way that it's designed is I take a phone and I put it up against a tag and then I remove the phone. But, like, that doesn't scale well. It was hard to get an intern who was willing to do this 8 hours a day. I couldn't get one. So anyway, I had to figure out how to automate that. And then you have to, of course, see whether something's crashing too. So the way that I, it, this is this was the biggest part of the project was trying to figure out how the hell to fuzz this stuff. It took me months of work. But I finally came up with a couple of solutions. So one is this reader. I should have had this slide. I was in, where was I? I was in some foreign country, Norway or something, and they had this exact reader that I had at the airport, and you use it as, like, you know, your frequent flyer badge or something. I don't know. I was like, oh my God, I know that. It's an ACR-122U. But anyway, so I use this to emulate. It can read and write NFC tags, and it can emulate, you know, a tag like this. And so the phone can't tell the difference between a tag and what this reader spits out. And I use this libNFC. And then to simulate the, like, peer-to-peer transactions, I use this other NFC card called SCL3711 with this other library. So anyway, so those selections worked, but they had some limitations. So, like, they didn't support every single protocol. With some work they could, but I didn't do it. So anyway, I couldn't fuzz all the parts, and I couldn't fuzz super low level. The part that's in the green hazy part is the part that I actually tested. Okay, so here's some, like, super boring movies, but like I said, it took me like 3 or 4 months to do it, so you guys can watch for 10 seconds. So basically, I say, I turn off NFC, now I'm an NFC tag, I turn it on, and it, you know, so it's fuzzing, right? It's not fast, right? So it's like a test case every 5 seconds or something. So it was taking, you know, weeks to fuzz any significant amount. So the one on the right that was just running was the Nokia N9, and then here's the whatever phone this was, some Android phone, I can't remember what it was. So anyway, and it fuzzes. The way I was doing is I would send a fuzz test case, and then I would send a known good test case to make sure that everything was still working. Because sometimes, like, the NFC would get all screwy and it wouldn't work anymore, and so then I would be testing, but it wasn't actually testing. So anyway, that's my life for like 3 weeks. I would just run in my basement once in a while and, you know, make sure everything was still running, and then run back upstairs. That's real life hacking. That's not leverage, right? So leverage, the dude would have been like, psh, oh yeah, here we go. Whoop, I won, you know. But real life is running fuzzers in your basement for weeks. You know, my other complaint about leverage is that it's a total copy of the A-Team. If anyone's ever watched Leverage, total rip-off of the A-Team, except now there's, like, computers and stuff. So watch a movie or watch that show and think about the A-Team, and you'll be like, damn it, Charlie was right. This is a total rip-off of the A-Team. Okay, so I fuzzed. What happened? I fuzzed. Oh, Nexus S was that other phone. So anyway, I fuzzed Nexus S running what at the time was the latest OS, which was Gingerbread 233, and then the Nokia N9 running what was at the time the latest PR1.2. I ran, like, 30 to 60,000 test cases. And like you saw, each one takes like 5 to 10 seconds or something like that. Here's the different things I tested. So like I said, you know, somewhere between 30 and 50,000. I did both, like, you know, smart and dumb fuzzing. So anyway, I did a pretty thorough job, I think, of testing these implementations. But like I said, the bad thing is it's like 150 bytes, so it shouldn't be that hard to do. So what's the results? Okay, well, basically, as soon as you turn the fuzzer on, like, Android starts, like, getting upset. So this is you'll get all the time. It's just a Java exception, right? So tags, which remember is the application that deals with this stuff, starts throwing these exceptions, but they're not, you know, they're not really security issues because they're not memory corruption or something. It's just an exception. It's annoying, but it's not that big a deal. You can't get control of the phone, for example. You run it for a little longer, and then all of a sudden, now instead of the application dying, now the service is dying. So it's like, okay, that's like progress, I guess, right? But it's still, these are still just Java exceptions, you know, not a security issue, but you know, at least I know my fuzzer is working. Eventually, I got started to get some native code crashes. So this is a native code crash in the in the service, and basically, if you just send this PDU, which is the one of the like basic unit for the peer-to-peer communications, it'll crash the Android service. But it's just a null pointer to reference. So again, not a security issue really, but it's kind of cool that now at least it's dying in native code. And this is basically like you send a certain PDU without first sending another, you know, like sort of a setup PDU. So it's still not that big a deal. And then finally, I found like a decent bug. So this was in 2.2.3.3, which is now it's a rather old version of Android. But this is a double free, and so the key is to see it's dying in free. And then the really important thing to, if you want to trace down the bug, is this log message about like libmsc lcp check lcp returned ff. Right. So if you do that, if you look at that, and then you look at the source code, you'll see what the source code looks like. And there's a spot where it says, you know, so you see it printing out that message I just talked about, right? Returned blah, 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 so I know it's there. And then it frees the buffer that has the data. Cool, you know, that's what you're supposed to do when you're done with it. But then, and then it goes to this clean and return. And clean and return, it calls data D init, which then frees it as well. So you're not supposed to do that, right? So freeing things twice is bad. It corrupts memory. So in this situation, against an old Gingerbread device, you can imagine a scenario where you know, the guy from Leverage sneaks up next to you with a tag and takes over your phone. So that was cool. So they actually fixed, so Google fixed this bug in 4.0.1. On their own, they found this bug. Or just luckily, it happened to get fixed. I don't know. But the bad thing about Android is like their whole like, you know, it's fragmented, right? So, you know, there's a lot of phones that can't update, or there's a lot of phones that like the carrier doesn't really want them to update. So there's a lot of vulnerable phones still out there that have that particular bug in it. And then I found a bunch of other bugs that I would have reported to Google, except I never really quite figured out what they were. Because it's like really hard to reproduce things and see it turns out. So anyway, here's one that dies in malloc. Usually that's bad. It means like memory's corrupted, like the heap is corrupted in some manner. Here's one that dies in free. Here's one that dies. This one's definitely like a bad one. So if you know about like exploitation, so this one dies in free when you're trying to unlink, you know, the linked list there. And this is like the classical heap overflow stuff. And then here's another one that dies in malloc. So anyway. So those are the bugs I found. So there were some low-level bugs in the implementation of at least back in Android 2.3.3. I don't know if they fixed those other ones because I couldn't really test them very well. So there's some bugs, but like this is something you can probably take care of with some work. And then the amazing thing was the Nokia phone, no bugs. I found zero crashes. Like I don't know if my fuzzer was not working right or what, but or they're just like rock solid, you know, code people, which is possible, I guess. So that was good. So the Nokia, I found nothing. Against the Android, I found some bugs. But it turns out that low-level stuff, which is what I focus about 90% of my time on, was not what I should have done. So it turns out that the high-level stuff is actually where all the really interesting stuff happens. Okay, so what applications can you get to handle NFC data? I don't want to worry about apps people download because then I have to worry about if my target has downloaded that. I want stuff that's by default on the OS and stuff that happens without the user having to do anything. So what happens? So when you first try it, like if you just try a tag with like, you know, some words on it or something, these from left to right is Gingerbread, ice cream sandwich, both Android, and then the Nokia N9. It's like, yeah, it shows you the text. Not very exciting. So this is why originally I was like, the high-level stuff's going to be super boring. But it turns out that they added a bunch of like cool features that make it pretty exciting. So in Android, they have this functionality called Beam. And this is, I'll talk more about it in a second, but it's basically a way that like you can share content with your friends. So you've seen these commercials where it's like, you know, oh, look here, let's touch phones, and like now you have my music or whatever. So this uses Android Beam. Nokia has a couple things, one called content sharing and one called Bluetooth pairing. that are kind of interesting. And then Samsung, which actually runs Android on their phone, they weren't content with Android Beam. They wanted even more like cool beaming technology. So they have their thing called S Beam. And I'll talk about that in a minute. All right. So Android, so I'll talk about each of those, and it turns out each of those are problematic. So Android Beam started an ice cream sandwich. It's basically a way that two devices can share data. While the sender has to press a button to send it, the receiver doesn't have to press anything. It just shows up. So it's an interesting security decision there when, you have to press a button if you want to share your file, but if stuff is showing up on your phone, that's okay. So if you want to know what you can share in Android, all you have to do is look at all the things that register intents. And so it turns out that there's only three applications by default that register for intents. Tags, of course, we knew about that. Contacts, so that's a way you can share contacts with each other. Contacts aren't that interesting. But it's like, the browser, too. So so here's a picture of someone wanting to share a web page with their friend. Okay, this is bad, right? So watch. Here I put the phone near a tag, and it opens up a web page that I want it to, right? So I mentioned before, and you notice the user didn't do anything besides, put the phone there. They didn't have to press a button to accept it. So instead of now having to parse 150 bytes, you have to be able to have a web browser with no bugs, right? We all know how easy that is. So yeah, so instead of 150 bytes, now we've got to worry about web stuff. You can also, in Android at least, you can open up images, of course. You can open up audio files, video files, font files. So now your attack surface has gotten very large, which isn't ideal. All right, so here's a demo. These two guys wrote most of this exploit, so thanks to them. Let's see if I can do this. Okay. Is this over here? Where are you guys? There you are. Okay. Let's see. All right. So this, if all goes well, this will eventually be a shell. Okay. So here is a phone. It's running Android 4.0.1. Right? No tricks here. This is a tag, NFC tag. So I'm going to just present the tag without touching anything on the phone to the phone and see what happens. So the browser opens up for a minute. Oh, man. Let's see. This might not work. Let's see. Try it again. Maybe it was asleep or something. Maybe I don't have the same IP address I used to have. Give me 1 second, and then I'll give up. Let's try it again. Okay, well, I'll have to show you the backup movie. It's boring. So what's supposed to happen is I touch, and if you want to see it later, it works when people aren't staring at me. So you take the tag, you touch the tag to the phone. The phone opens up a web page to a website that has a browser exploit sitting there. It exploits the browser, and then you have, your shell. So then it's like touch a tag, get a shell. It's pretty cool. So I told Google about this. I was like, yeah, it's probably a bad idea that I can touch a tag and get a shell. And they're like, yeah, we like that you don't have to press any buttons before you get web pages and stuff. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna fix that bug, and then we're good to go, right? No, we'll fix the last WebKit bug, and everything will be good. So yeah, so Google still, they think it's okay to do that. I kind of disagree, but what do I know? Okay, so I'll show you this is the video of the exploit. It's not as cool as in real life. So touch a tag, right? The web page opens and then goes away. And then up here, you actually have a shell. So yeah, it's not a great user experience to have it. So yeah, and then the thing is funny is I talked about the, so here I'm looking at images and stuff. But so the thing is, if you walk up and you pat someone on the rear who has a phone in their pocket, and then they're like, you're like, what are you doing? You're like, oh, nothing. Well, you already have a shell. There's nothing they can do about it. You know what I mean? But yeah, the more realistic thing is, again, the poster and the card scheme and stuff. So anyway, that's touch a tag, get a shell. So the thing that the big takeaway was like, this is what I thought the attack service was, right? It's like mostly Java crap. But then the real attack service is this, the browser, right? So if I can go from NSC to the browser, and that's really the big no-no, I think. Okay, so what about on the Nokia side? Well, they have something called content sharing, which does more or less the same thing. And so on the Android side, you have NFC on or off. That's all your only options. On Nokia, you have NFC on and off. And then you also have this second option called confirm sharing and connecting. It's like, this looks like exactly what I wanted, right? I want to have to press yes before you start like making my phone do stuff. But it turns out this isn't, it's sort of a misnomer. So here is the same sort of thing for Nokia. So here I'm gonna show that I can get to lots of interesting attack service without the user doing anything. So the user just gets near another device, and then let's see what it does. So it says, "Oh, I'm downloading this PowerPoint file." It's like, well, it's kind of bad that it downloads, but it's just sitting there. Oh my God, it's opening it. So you can't open a web browser on the Nokia through NFC, but you can open their contact thing, their image gallery, their video player, and what I think is worse is their Office suite. So like any bug in PDF, Word documents, PowerPoints, Excel spreadsheets, any of those bugs you can get through NFC. So it's pretty crazy. So again, it's an idea of the attack surface is much larger than we thought. We thought it was just, this little con dialogue thing, but really it's all these other things too. So again, I wanted to like have a cool demo, so I was like, well, I'll look for some bugs and stuff. But you don't even have to look for bugs. So the Nokia N9 that I had, it shipped with vulnerable versions of libraries. So like libpng had these two bugs in it that was on the Nokia phone that I got. But I'm not happy with public bugs. I want to take it a step further. So I looked for bugs myself, and then I found some crashes in their PowerPoint viewer and their PDF viewer. But I'm not happy with boring crashes, right? I'll find some actual bugs that you can take advantage of. So here's a bug I found that was actually, it was in the MeeGo, but it was actually a K Office bug. So like if you use K Office for some reason, it was there too. This bug has since been fixed. I reported it responsibly while giving my black hat talk on the screen. So I think we call that coordinated disclosure here at Microsoft. I coordinated with my audience. So here's a bug that it creates a buffer on the heap of size group xlen, which is some value it read out of your file, and then it reads a short out of your file, and then it copies that short number of bytes into your previous buffer. So it's very classical heap overflow. You control the length of both the amount of data copied and the buffer, and you control all the data into the buffer too. So anyway, that's bad. So that's one way you can do it. So you can share. Let me stop this for a second. So you can share with a Nokia, like a bad PowerPoint or something, and get control of the phone that way. But I was still looking around. If you Google for like Nokia N9 NFC, you get like 100 hits of this stupid video. So, and you can't hear the sound, but it's like the guy's listening to he's jamming out his music on his Nokia N9. And then he touches it to his speaker, and he doesn't touch anything with his hands, right? And all of a sudden, the speaker's playing his music, right? It's like, wait a second, how does that work, right? There's something fishy going on with that. So I bought one of those speakers, and like sure enough, I touched my phone on the speaker, and it's like all of a sudden the music's coming out of the speaker. So I was like, how does that work? So I figured it out, and basically the speaker sends a small little NDEF message that basically sets up a Bluetooth connection to the phone. And then over the Bluetooth, it can stream the music, right? You can't really do music over NFC because it's too slow. So it takes away the hassle of having to type in like a PIN code to set up or to set up Bluetooth. Instead, it just happens magically over NFC. So I was like, well, this is probably bad. So let's see. So it turns out, like, my whole life, I've wanted a root shell. Like, that's my goal, is every time I get a device, I want a root shell. But it turns out what you really want is this. You want Bluetooth control of a device. Like, this is, like, way easier, way cooler, and here's a demo. So here is a NFC tag. Here's my phone. Notice Bluetooth is off. Oh, wait, let me go off, start one more thing before I start this video. So remember there was that thing about content sharing, right? And like you can have the paranoid setting that says, please alert me before content sharing. That didn't save you on the PowerPoint thing. You can have that on and the PowerPoint would still show up and download. It will save you from this one, so keep that in mind. So anyway, Bluetooth is off. I have an NFC tag. And then I'm going to present the tag to the phone. So beyond that little NFC thing that shows up, you don't really see anything else on the phone. But what it does is it sets up a Bluetooth connection to my computer. And so now the thing is paired with my computer, just like you would pair your phone with your car, and just like how your car can control your phone in some manner. Now I have control. So here I mount the file system of the phone, and I can just like look at all their files and download them and that sort of thing. And meanwhile, on the phone, you don't see anything. If you're very astute, you'll see that there's like a little Bluetooth thing on in the very, very top. But that's the other interesting thing is Bluetooth was off. This thing turned it on for me. So the NFC tag, not only did it pair, but it was like, oh, apparently you want to have Bluetooth on too, because why else would you want to pair? So it turns on Bluetooth, pairs to me, and then I can see like all their images, the photos they've taken. I could just copy these to my file system, documents they have, stuff like that. So you can grab all their files. And then you can do other stuff too, because that's what's sort of fun about phones versus computers. So here's an example of me sending a text message from the phone to my iPhone. So it was like, I just send it and just wait for it. And then it shows up on my phone. So anyway, so I just sent a text message. The guy wouldn't even know that I was doing it. I could send it to like a pay service and make a bunch of money. Here's this other little program that brings up like a little controller of the phone, which is kind of sweet. So here I'm going to look at their contacts, and this will read their contacts that they have in their contact application as well as ones they have on their SIM card. So stop, and I'll scroll that. Here's like some of their contacts, whatever. These are fake, obviously. And then the final thing. And so far you haven't seen anything going on the phone. The final thing is then I can actually just dial the phone. That's my phone number, so I geniusly hid it from you guys so you wouldn't all call me. But anyway, so now on the phone you actually see something. It's like, whoa, I'm dialing Fred Flintstone. I spelled Fred wrong. And sure enough, it shows up on your phone. So once you have Bluetooth control of the phone, you can do just about anything. The really bad thing is, I haven't confirmed this because I don't have one, but supposedly the Windows Phone 8 is vulnerable to this particular bug, or was it? It was when Black Hat was going on. So make sure you look into that, make sure that doesn't happen. As I mentioned, that confirmed sharing thing will save you from this. So if you try the attack with the Bluetooth with confirmed sharing on, instead of it just automatically turn on Bluetooth and sharing, you get this thing that says, are you sure you want to do it? Which is good. Okay, so one last little thing before I wrap up. So they had this mobile Ponone, and like, I don't know, sometime this fall. And I was really mad because they announced it like a week before Black Hat, and I was like, I got all these NFC bugs, but I'm already going to talk about it on Black Hat, so I couldn't talk. Excuse me, I couldn't win this competition. But some other guys did. So how did they do it? These guys from MWR Labs, a bunch of smart guys. So Samsung has this S Beam where you can communicate things. Remember I mentioned Android Beam doesn't let you open up a web page, it only lets you open up that other stuff. Well, the S Beam does let you open up a web page. So they did basically the same thing that I showed you, which is they allowed you, or no, I had it wrong. So Android lets you open up the web browser but nothing else. S Beam lets you open up all the other crap. So S Beam, they had a 0 day in the document viewer, just sort of like I did on the Nokia. And then they through NFC they have that open up and they get a shell and they win. So that's how it worked for that's how they won the Ponone for NFC is via almost exactly the same attacks I've been talking about. And I don't have a video of their attack, but I'll show you what it looks like to share in S Beam. So again, you hold up the phones to each other. This person has to the sender has to say okay, the receiver, it just happens without them doing anything. So It just downloads. Downloading, downloading. And then it just starts playing, right? So if you had a vulnerability in there in the video player and you can get close enough, you can make that happen. All right, so what's the fix for this? Well, you could fix all the low-level bugs, because the low-level stuff happens no matter what. But that's a doable thing. Like I said, it's only 150 bytes. The high-level stuff is a little harder, right? So you would want to have prompts at least, I think, or at least an option to turn on prompts where it's like, please, I accept this or I don't accept this. But the problem is for the poster attack, like I want to share, I want to get this free song. So if it shows up a dialogue that says, hey, do you want to go to open up a web page or something? You're like, yeah, I want to do that. And you don't know if it's the good or the bad web page. So there's still kind of a problem with that. But maybe if it's very specific, like it doesn't say Samsung anymore, it says like, Bob's Hacker website, then you're like, no, I don't want that. So it's possible it's a solution. You could also maybe do some like crazy crypto signing or something. I don't know. But the high level stuff is a little harder to deal with. So we have to think as a group how to fix that. So just to wrap up, like NFC, while it's still not totally adopted everywhere, like I like to think we're a little ahead of where we could be on security. Like we have the opportunity to fix things before everyone has it. So we should do that. It opens up a new server-side attack. It's hard to test, but I'm released all the code, so hopefully people can test this stuff now pretty easily. And probably we should have some sort of option where like nothing happens over NFC without the user first saying okay. And a bunch of people helped me on this, so thanks to them. And that's it. Anyone have any questions for me?